Go. Oh.
Thank you, Katya, for coming and tweaking your schedule. So my final project is stepping into the world, stepping into ourselves, examining the relationship between organisation development, process work, and theory and inner work. Which is the time? Okay. So, and again, I want to dedicate this project. Going to do one at a time. Go back one. That's a man. Okay. To my study committee, Julie, Dawn and Gary, and to the Mary Webbs in my life. Mary Webbs is somebody from Julie's past who Lee might know of, who actually came up in a session of ours. So, let me start by asking us three questions. Thank you, Nancy. Can we apply process work to organisational settings, and if so, how is the process work model different or similar to traditional OD models? And the second one, can we use inner work to grow a business and develop an individual within that business? And finally, does inner work have an effect on the level of success we achieve in a CR sense? So show of hands, has anybody here at some point in time pondered one or more of those questions? Great. What a receptive audience. Good questions? I like it. Okay. So these questions were and still are. You're getting ahead of me. What do I say? Okay. Is it automatic or are you thinking that's Nancy? Is it going on ahead by itself? No. Okay. Wait for the cue. Okay. So these three questions were ones that have perplexed me and probably still do. So I made the basis of my project. And the way I addressed these questions was to document my own, was to document my own journey in starting off my own process-oriented OD consulting business. So basically, I was the consultant to my own business. So I was both the consultant and the business owner. So in this way, I was in a dual role. But the great thing was, I had my own first client. Okay.
How did you like working with
him? The pay was lousy, no breaks, no holiday pay, but it was, you know, didn't have a choice. So basically, the reason I chose this project was a couple of reasons. I wanted to actually deepen my knowledge of OD principles. That was the first reason. And I also have a passion to work with business people. And the belief behind that is that, rightly or wrongly, I believe if you want to change the world, you've got to work with, in part, the people in power. And I still think the people in power on the planet are still the corporate and business people. That's a whole thing in itself, I know, but that's just the one viewpoint. So in terms of timing, I want to do the comparative stuff first, till about halfway through the talk, and then talk about inner work towards the end and share some inner work, and at the end leave time for questions. So in terms of the comparison of models, as most of you know, OD is like a huge field and the information is basically almost limitless. So I chose to focus the study of OD on three different areas. Thank you, Nancy. So I chose to investigate, and again, organisational vision. And here I actually studied both how it's defined and also how it's created. And again, and I looked at motivation and paralysis. Paralysis, I mean lack of motivation. So I examined this from both workplace motivation as well as like a personal motivation. And once more. And finally, organisational change in terms of, I wanted to pull that change process apart and see how change really worked from a point of view of, again, organisations and my own personal change from a chiropractor to a consultant. And then use that as a template, if you like, and apply it to businesses. And I chose these three areas because I felt these were the three areas that companies perhaps need the most facilitation and support around. Also, coincidentally or not, these are the areas I struggled in my own business. So I felt if I learned these areas and learned to apply them, I had a greater chance of getting work in those areas. And what I did was, for each of these three areas, I actually presented a dilemma or challenge in that area in terms of my own business. I did a comparative study of OD thinking to process work thinking, and then did inner work from both a process work point of view and an OD point of view. And my goal was to actually learn the knowledge, learn the application of the knowledge, get into my own business, and then also support my business in doing that. It's like a three-pronged approach. So in terms of talking about the comparison of models from process work to OD, I thought we would play a little game. Press play, and the game is called... What's the game called? Yay! And I promise you, I didn't include with ants. Really freaky how similar our presentations are in that sense. So here's your job. We're going to put up slides of different quotes on the screen.
Oh my God.
And your job is to pick if it's from a process work paradigm or an OD paradigm. Okay? And prizes will be given. Okay? Okay? There'll be bonus prizes. There'll be bonus prizes if you can guess the actual author. Okay? I promise you we didn't actually collude. So I kind of freaked out when Anne did her thing. In a good way, but laid the foundation. So, it's in the field, yeah, thanks. Okay.
That's process work.
That's process work, very good, okay. There you go. First one. Press, and again. Okay. So, organizations intent on building shared visions continually encourage members to develop their personal visions. If people don't have their own vision, I'm looking to sign up for someone else's. Anyone guess the author? Well, you guys are just like, too good. Do you want more chocolate? Peter Senge wrote that. But she's sharing with you. Okay. So Peter Senge wrote, so press one more, Nancy. From Fifth Discipline. He wrote two great books in OD, one called Fifth Discipline, one called The Dance of Change. He also co-authored one called Presence, which Anne put me onto. It's more of like a narrative, philosophical viewpoint of change. Great book. And what he spoke about in terms of visions is he stressed the importance of individuals in the organisation getting their own vision, and those visions combining to support the organisational vision. Okay. He also says a shared vision is not an idea. It's not even an important idea such as freedom. It is rather a force in people's heart, a force of impressive power. Okay. And there are elements of this in the way Arnie talks about the big U of an organization. Arnie talks about the big U's individual big U's of the people combined to form the company or team big U, same way Senge does. And that way, it's a degree of similarity. Okay, next slide. Thank you, Nancy. Doing a great job. And again. Okay. So again, referring to visions, it requires an extraordinary openness and willingness to entertain a diversity of ideas. Organizational? Yeah. What's consensus? Process work or OD? Only two. It's easy. I give you multiple choice. And made it hard. OD? Penny. Great. Guess the author? We didn't have enough yet. Anyone? No. Keep that in mind for later on. But not that one. Go again.
Appreciative inquiry.
I tricked you. One small piece, Nancy. Peter Senge, tricky bugger. Okay. Swap that. Tricky bugger. So, if you go one more, now compare that one to the next slide. The philosophy of deep... Who was that? Arnold Mandel. So the big difference here is Arnie talks about... So is the pointer working? Great. Arnie talks about the feelings and the atmosphere. So this was a consistent theme all the way through the OD. The OD guys and girls generally don't tend to focus on non-CR aspects of reality. And if they do, as Anne touched on, they don't seem to have a consistent and agreed upon way to access those levels. Would you agree with that, Anne? So, and that's the big difference, I think, between OD and process work, and it's like a recurrent theme. Okay, get the idea of the game?
Yeah.
Yes? Got you. Okay, go, Anne. Go, Nancy. Next one. Okay. Another way to know that you're encountering resistance is to use your own body as a thermometer. When you start to feel uneasy in a discussion with a client, it may be an early sign that resistance is on its way. Oh, look at you. Do you want more chocolate? You're going to be a sugar high? That's OD by a guy called Peter Block. It's got, yep, Flawless Consulting. She's got a title. Okay. So Peter Block wrote a great book called Flawless Consulting. And something else he said, and he compared resistance in organisations. So I think resistance in organisations is similar to what we call an edge in some ways. Okay?
Kind of
like
negative feedback.
Yes. But you know, in 2 seconds, you're a step ahead of me.
But I like that he has the body in there.
Yes. So he also says the moment you start to get bored or confused about what all this has to do with the problem at hand, you should begin to suspect that what you're getting is resistance and not just an effusive attempt to give you all the facts. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Next slide, thanks, Nancy. Now, in comparison, if a facilitator finds herself losing track of the conversation, getting lost, not knowing what to do next, or feeling nervous, uncomfortable, or embarrassed, this may reflect... Look at you. You are just too... Julie Diamond and Lee Spark Jones. Okay. So what's common here is both people are saying, both authors, all three of them in this case, the body is an important tool of facilitation. And I was kind of shocked to see OD people using, say, what we call shamanic techniques in facilitation. I think it's quite like exciting and inspiring. Okay. And as Elaine said, where the concept kind of differs is that we have a idea of feedback. So resistance can also be negative feedback. Okay. Or it can be positive feedback to conflict. If the resistance is in a conflictual way, it's like saying yes to conflict. So either of those could be an intervention. How are you all doing out there? Okay, cool. Okay, good. Okay, Nancy, one more. So two people... and the author? Oh, how'd you get it so quick? Jennifer. Joe, good bread.
Oh, I said that.
Oh. Don't get me a sugar high coming in for this. Who hasn't got one yet? Yeah, I. Scoundrel! You scoundrel! That's Midori. It's just the camera woman. Okay. So go one more, please. Comparing to this. OD? ODs. Any ideas on the author? Bonus point for this one. No, not Sengang. Block. Block. Not Weekly. Edgar Schein. Edgar Schein is a really cool dude. Okay. He wrote a series of books called Process Consultation, which is the title itself is kind of cool, I thought. And he's considered to be one of the fathers of modern OD thinking. And in his book, this one, he actually speaks about group structure in terms of communication theory. And he looks at things like who's talking to who talks first, who gets interrupted, okay? And a lot of the signals he uses are actually non-verbal, or what we call secondary. And he uses those to form his hypothesis on group structure. He also talks about what he calls double messages, which are actually double signals, and they're basically the same as process work. And throughout the book, there's a recurrent theme that the process of OD is important as opposed to a more prescriptive approach. Okay? So he's like, it's amazing how much his stuff was aligned with process work really closely. It's really quite inspiring. Thank you, Nancy. And again, maybe. Okay, disturbers are not enemies to exclude, but allies. Great. Who said that first? I think Nikki O's due for one. Arnie, no? You can sure. Oops. No? It was process work. Any other than the author? The author? No. Go, Nancy. No chocolate for that one. That was Gary. Okay. Now, compare that. One more, please, Nancy, if you aren't eating your chocolate too quickly. So indeed, one of the most frequent problems that I observe in the unwillingness of top executives is to confront the tyranny of incompetence and remove those who are clearly unwilling to grow into the change process. AD, correct. Author is? Any takers? Murphs? Not Block. Not Senji. No. You charge them every time you guess. Go, Nancy. It's actually Robert Quinn. Okay. Yes. Yes. It's tyrannizing. I saw it as tyrannizing the competence. I'm basically bringing them down.
Can you repeat the question? Sorry, I didn't hear it.
Oh. Tyranny. She asked about the tyranny of competence. I interpreted it as like tyrannizing competence, okay? Or I interpreted it as basically just being competent as opposed to being passively compliant. How do you see it, Heike?
I was just wondering whether people focus so much on being competent.
Yes.
Like, and that's valued so much in an organization.
Yes.
That then goes against being willing to change or willing to grow into the change process.
So I
don't really know, just wondering.
I was unsure about that too. But I think the key comparison is to remove those. He speaks in quite definite terms about anyone who goes against the flow to take them out, somehow move them out of the organisation.
Great, and I think what I'm interested in is seeing competence described as a tyranny.
Yes.
That's an interesting concept.
I think from the context of what he was saying,
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, can I say?
I think it's confidence versus like being passionate.
Oh.
Being passive. Oh. Being,
isn't it?
I thought the you hesitate to remove somebody who's really confident, because I think he's confident.
I'm in a group process here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just going to say, in training, like in training, when you're in training as an individual therapist, that tyranny of competence comes up a lot. Like,
yes. You
know, if you have to know and have to be competent, then it's very hard to learn a new system of working
with people.
So I was thinking it might be similar with organizations. It blocks the learning process, so it inhibits growth.
Yes.
The curse of the expert or expertise, right?
That's probably true. Thanks, Nancy.
Interesting.
And then compare that again to this one. Who said that first? I think it was Barbara. Barbara and Penny could fight over it. Okay. And that again is a big difference in OD compared to process work. Process work, as we know, in theory, welcomes the disturbance and unfolds the disturbance. Whereas OD still doesn't seem to have a agreed upon way to deal with the disturber in the midst. Okay. And I like what Julie said in her Day Off Teams seminar in Brisbane last year. She said the teams need to align themselves with as an oppositional vector, with the opposing force, find its wisdom or meaning, and then bring that meaning back to the team in a way which is useful. Okay. Thanks, Nancy.
Would you say,
yeah.
Do you think that's like a core difference that we actually try to integrate the disturbance?
I think the two core differences is that one and the non-CR levels of reality. I think, and also I should frame the whole thing up. I was actually biased in my comparison. I'm saying, what have we got as process workers which could add to the already existing OD model? What can I bring to the table here which makes me unique as an OD consultant with a process work background? Okay. So I was looking for things specifically to market myself around or to exploit a knowledge or a skill I had which isn't out there in the general consultant field. And the two things I found to say was the level NCR levels of reality and the disturber.
Chaos theory?
No.
Yeah, but it is
still. It's chaos theory, yes. Who said? What's consensus? It's process work. Have we got an author? Elena, catch. Very good. Very good. What's a typo? What is right? Yes, sorry. What is right? It's a typo. And Joe refers this to us as one of the fundamental tenets of process work. And this, when I studied motivation, I could find nothing on process work literature on motivation, let alone motivation in the workplace. And I think because motivation is almost antithetical to the paradigm itself. Motivation implies, one sec, going from a state of low motivation, which is less desirable, to high motivation, which is more desirable. Whereas process work is more into unfolding the low motivation and trying to find the value or the gold in the low motivational space. Yes, Barbara.
I actually have a different way of seeing that, because all the vector work is about direction and local motion, right? So
yes.
What motivates us to move is, for me, all in the vector work, to tune
That's
into
true.
To tune into the big motivator, the prime mover.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that. Yep.
Yeah.
Let me think a bit.
Think about teleology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I agree.
Not explicit.
I think for a second. Yeah, it's a good discussion though. I like it.
Well, what do you say about
motivation? Maybe just that's an area that hasn't been focused on. Like, I just was really interested in what you said about how you would understand motivation from a process perspective.
Yes.
That'd be good to write about, because going further with what you're doing, it's like, how does what you have learned from process work add to what exists in the field?
Yes.
That would be a very interesting paper on process-oriented motivational thinking.
Well, another one?
Right? Yeah.
We should collaborate. We'll collaborative research.
Yeah, good.
Yes. Katya? Be nice.
I just happen to have gotten a little insider perspective, or because I've been reading your thesis, and you actually do talk about like motivation from a process work perspective, in that you and differentiated it from OD stuff, in that so much of the secondary experiences, rather than being thrown out, become the stuff of motivation, become kind
yes.
of this effortless energy or
yes.
something like that.
I, my inner
I just
work.
Wanted to remind
Thank you.
You.
That's great. Also, I think it's true, a couple of examples. In my own inner work, my lack of motivation actually became motivation when I went the enantiodromic pattern we know. Okay. Also, getting Julian Lee's book, they say, sometimes an ability to live one's hopes and dreams brings bitterness and despair, which could be linked to hopelessness, which could be then linked to tenuously, going to misquote Joseph and Julie, could be linked to lack of motivation. So I think lack of motivation could mean an edge to a high dream in the background. Okay, would you agree in what you said? So I think helping a group to get in touch with a high dream in the background, okay, could be a good remedy for the motivation. I'm guessing if you amplify the lack of motivation enough, if we go into the high dream from an enantiodromic perspective.
Which is a little bit like a visual inquiry from my
which is a little bit like appreciative inquiry,
yeah.
I think. Keying into that high dream.
Yeah. Oh, you're, yeah. So last round of questions, ready? I've got a few left too. Okay, good. Okay. Thanks, Nancy. Discovery and organization's core values through long discussions about organizational history, key events, founders' beliefs, and the work people actually do, and the glue that holds the organization together. OD. Barbara, you need any more chocolate?
No.
Midori. Okay. Big bonus points for the author here if anyone gets it. No. But you're close. Sorry? No. Go, Nancy. This guy called Stuart in the article we found. That's I told you it was tricky. It's bonus points. Yeah. Fortune. Probably would in my case. Yeah. And but what was interesting, I thought, was a lot of these things he mentions are actually the key, like, building blocks to myth from process work point of view. When a couple meets, what happened first was the historical events, the beliefs around the thing. Plus, he refers to the glue, which is like the myth, the process mind, the big U, as Arnie calls it, which brings the group together.
Right.
Jennifer.
Can I just ask a question about that quote then, if you're going to hold that thought?
Yeah.
Is that actually the quote, or is it that all those things are the glue that holds the organization together?
No,
I don't quite understand.
I should have contextualized the quote. The quote is in context of myth. So saying the way to get the myth is to do this by discovering those things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Jennifer, go now if you like. That's fine. I think I can.
I don't know anything about OD so much, but yeah. I wanted to know when it started. Like, who were the found? Like, what was the time period that
the
people were?
The founders now.
You know what I mean? Like, when did people start conceptualizing OD stuff?
Who's the guy? I'm looking at. Now I know his name if I hear it. Kurt Lewin. 40s. Yeah. Kurt Lewin was one of the original. Would you agree with that, Anne?
Yeah. And Max often mentions
Lewin. Yeah. Lewin was like one of the original AD people. Okay, next one, Nancy, thank you. Yelena?
Oh, Colin!
Finally, she says. Hey? What's me? It's knowledge is amazing in this room. So what I loved about this was when they say, yeah, isn't it cool? The two things I like, it's like a guiding star, they say, which to me was like the teleology of our myth, bringing, like Sam said, for bringing us forward, the strange attractor. And the forever pursued but never reached. Again, it's mythical. It's like a thing we battle with our whole life. We never quite get to live it out totally, but we constantly pursue it. Yes.
I would love to give an example of this. When the state asked us, when the state did this inquiry about part of the wrong with this. When we were investigated by the state a few years ago, we had to rewrite our ethics. And one of the things that those of us that were working on the ethics statement found was that we were completely confused about our purpose and our strategy, or our purpose and our standards. And I think that's characteristic of a very ideological or, you know, philosophy-driven or ideal-driven movement or organization, is that your purpose, which can never be fulfilled, which is what this says, it's like something that you're aiming for, but it's an inspiration.
Yes.
Gets confused with the things that you tangibly actually can positively create in the world and measure and evaluate and stuff. So actually the Personal Work Institute has been very much as an organization involved in disentangling those two things as part of its developmental process.
Great example. Thanks. Thanks, Lee. Yeah. Thanks, Nancy. Sure. Okay. Tendencies or information from a mythic level tend to be more sustainable or stable. Time, you're good. Can you get the location of the book? So again, I come back to the original point where, again, the tangible way we have to access non-CR levels of reality, it was a huge gift in process work to bring to AD. And finally, Nancy, last but not least. From... Oops, nice catch. Okay. So Arnie also says, to support sustainable businesses, organizational theory must include all its consensus reality structures as well as dreamland and big U experiences. Okay. So in summary of the comparison stuff, I think I've said it already, but basically the big differences is the NCR stuff, and the disturber, bringing the disturber, or the thing which is against us. And I just found it inspiring and exciting to have so much there, which is really similar to what we do. And I really believe that organizations are kind of right at the edge of where we're at. I mean, they're asking the right questions, they just aren't quite able to integrate what we as process workers know. And I think it's exciting that if we can bring it into the organizational stuff, it can make a huge difference to the organizations in terms of process work. Okay.
Do you think organization? Oh, my God, again, don't keep working.
Organizations are on the edge of where we're at, organizational development, like consultants, theories, whatever?
I think both. I think it's really exciting. So I think from what I've read and studied and spoken to people, they're asking the right questions and the answers are starting to seep in through, but they haven't quite formulated it in a clear, repeatable, accessible way like Arnie has. So that's why I think we're just one step ahead of the game and they're kind of slowly catching up. And if we just stay there and hang in there, then they almost, like surfing, I imagine. Like we're in the board and the wave's building behind us and we're positioned in this perfect spot. When the wave kind of comes, we'll be riding it.
What do you think we have to learn from them, though, given that I sort of have a personal bias that it's a two-way flow?
I agree totally.
Yeah.
I love the linearity of organizations in some contexts, you know, and I think like Julie's class was great last week around the whole marketing. I think that's where process work, being a psychologically based paradigm, Julie said psychologists are the world's worst marketers. So how we market ourselves, how we represent ourselves in the world, how we go out into the world, is worth going to learn from organisations.
I have another answer too.
Yep, great.
Which I'll probably talk about a little more tomorrow. But I think we tend to focus a lot on interventions and see that as OD work rather than seeing the whole spectrum of, you know, first making contact, how do you make that to actually getting the brief, all of the different steps to the very end. We tend not to focus as much on, we have a big focus on the interventions step of the whole OD process from my point of view.
That's true. Yeah. Thanks, Heike.
Trailer for tomorrow, right? Yeah. That was an ad. She's good at marketing.
coming soon. Okay. So thanks, Nancy. And again, okay. So can we use inner work to grow a business and develop an individual within a business? So in doing some inner work, I'll have to share with you for my vision. Okay. And again, Nancy. I did a vector walk where I walked four vectors. I walked a vector of myself in the present. Okay. I walked an individual who works for a potential organization I'm working for, the business itself, and my biggest challenge. And then when I walked the resultant vector, thank you, Nancy, what came up was the Earth Mother. It's the best picture I could find. And what I imagined was like a big, big-breasted, like, African woman, okay? And she's the one who, like, holds the people, nurtures them, looks after the whole, like, community. Yeah. Those four I walked before, we go back one slide, they were the sub-vectors.
And this was the big U.
This was the big U of those four vectors.
Mm.
And I was thinking about my vision for the organization. So first I thought, this is like my myth, my meta skill for my business, and that's really true. But then as I did more inner work, I realized she's secondary for me.
Mm.
She's the part of me I need to integrate into my own life and be more earth mothering to myself.
Mm.
Okay. My childhood dream has a mother in it. So I think the whole earth mother concept is very close to my childhood dream, and it's therefore like my life myth is intertwined with that. I know a few of you have told me, like my Elaine and Heike have told me, I'm different this residency to the last residency. And I think what's different to me, I feel different, is that I'm starting to integrate her more. You know, how to self-soothe, how to look after myself. And that's what I felt like flimsy around up to recently in my life. I think there's something about this project, both the business plus right in the project, which put me right up against my edges, you know, really central things in my life. And it was like before I could actually write something, I had to like live it and work on it in my own life. And not just on an intellectual sense, but actually on a really getting to know it inside of myself, in my cells, in my bones kind of sense. And in some ways, it's like confronting parts of myself which are really painful, which I had to, up till now, I managed to avoid, not confront them. And I think she was a really important figure in holding me through those places where I felt weak or flimsy or that were painful for me. So in that sense, like writing the project was like definitely mythic for me. So it was frightening, it was frustrating, and it was oddly euphoric at times. I think the euphoria comes from, since it's so close to my myth, every time I sat down to write, it was like coming face to face with my death. So every session of writing was like a near-death experience. I'm sure a lot of you would experience yourself, which is as something scary about that, something also euphoric in that as well. So back to the original question. Go back one more. Can we use inner work to grow a business and develop the individual in the business? I'd say definitely yes to the second part of that. Okay, and if we take Senge's theory that business visions are comprised of individual visions, people knowing their vision really well, that holds true to the business as well then. Okay. And also Max's quote, if you go a few forward now, is true as well. How we access more NCR experiences will give a business more sustainability as well and stability over time. I think it's really important in the business world. I think the challenge and the trick is how do we stay true to the principles of process work, okay, and process-oriented inner work and apply them into scenarios which basically mightn't be appropriate or easy or fit the methodology we're used to. And I think that is actually a challenge for the creativity of the consultant as well as their own personal growth. Now, I think that's where inner work's really important as well. Okay. One more, thanks, Nancy. Okay. So does inner work have an effect on the level of success we achieve in a CR sense? Well, here's an update. As of recently, I've got no clients apart from myself, okay? I've had two meetings with organisations. One is a conference centre on the Gold Coast where I live, and one's a school up in far north Queensland, and they're both still up in the air, okay? One of the keys there is actually a relationship in terms of, like, meeting people who I've already met. And, yes?
I'm sorry to butting. His books, I forget which one, he says in Aboriginal and Native culture, success is measured in how successful your relationships are.
Yes. And one of my last chapters in my thesis is actually about relationship. So the key to this game is actually a relationship, you know. And I think the Earth Mother helps me to be in relationship better as well. Okay. I think in hindsight, I was probably a little bit naive about this whole project in terms of building a business. I think I might have underestimated the enormity of the task and overestimated myself how big the task is of building a business in OD. And I think for me personally, it comes down to that mythic component of it. The mythic component is a slow grind, I guess, which slows the progress down, and basically a CR progress down. Sure. Like it's hard, as we all are sitting down every day, and having to work your ass off to write a paragraph. We all know that, you know. Yeah. For the next talk in the arrow, you know. And it felt like wading through quicksand someday. We all know what that's like. Everyone in this room knows what that's like. And I think for me personally, the project was so aligned to my myth, I had to go really slow in those places, both the project and the actual business, go slow in those places and use the Earth Mother Metaskill to hold myself through those places. Answer your question?
Thank you. Yes, it's such a fascinating discussion, I think, which comes up, I should
organizations themselves, doesn't it? How much to pay attention to the feeling level and what's going on and how the relationships and how much you should just get on with the business.
Yes, I agree.
What you have to do.
But I do think in my case, I suspect if I can stay in the path long enough, then I will achieve success. And the key there is actually, again, back to the earth mode, hold me through the ups and downs, the rejections, the traumas of being a consultant, the failures, the successes. That, I think, is really important. Is there a question there, Heike? Okay, bring it on.
Comment.
Far away.
That's okay. I think there's no doubt that's the case, both from experiences I've had working in the OD field, but also I think organisations are really beginning to understand that they need to give a lot of training in inner work if they want the best out of their people. They're beginning to really wake up around that, I think. And I mean, that's the sort of the work you're doing, right?
Okay.
You know, you are talking about success or grow of a business. I started my consultant career as cost management consultant when I was 20s.
Yes.
Which means my work is cost cutter.
Yes.
Downsizing.
Yes.
Is my job. But at that time, I think the many of the managers, owner, felt the failure of their business because they had to downsize their company. For the next year.
Yes.
But every time I saw, after the cost cutting or organization restructuring, they grow after that. Just like a crunching before the growth. But the people or even organizational consultant is afraid. You know, if they totally believe the growth is always like this.
Yes.
So it's like actually like this, as we have, as a life.
Yes.
So
a question is the comment there, though.
Yeah, so is this something kind of we can, the inner work can contribute, or process work, organizational development, contribute as coach for the management?
I think so. Here's what I was thinking as you were talking. What I was thinking was, is actually, this is a huge thing to say, but in terms of cost cutting and downsizing, if that was their process in the moment, and the inner work was to like downsize, then that's actually following that process, okay, which then would mean success down the track. Now that's a huge, that's a group process in itself in terms of, you know, people's jobs and everything else, but I think if it's an edge to cost cut, it's an edge to sack people in some context.
You define success, though, for yourself.
Wow, see, you've been stealing my notes. Okay. So this is a next question, like, what is success? Okay. You look right on it, Barbara. Okay. So through this project, there was something, again, euphoric and satisfying about staying close to myself and following my inner process. Okay. And in my case, this almost, and I do say almost, has become more satisfying than the fame or fortune I imagine from a CR ambition-driven success. Okay, and I guess to speak more personally, I think success has always been a big issue for me, and I wrestle with that. You know, in some ways, my biggest fear is mediocrity. You know, and this could come from my migrant background, where we moved to Australia. I was very aware of the sacrifices my parents made to come to Australia and also the dreams they had for me, you know. It could be from the racism growing up and a choice to say I'm never going to be that powerless again, okay. I remember my dad saying, you're going to be better than the white kids because if push comes to shove, they'll choose their own, which could be true, could not be true, but guess what? They're all white kids in my school. So it's kind of like, that's a big driving force, you know. Or maybe it's just as simple as that's just my nature, and that's just who I am, and that would have been there irrespective of my personal history, okay. Now, but either way, okay, now this project made me think, one more Nancy, you know, what is success, okay, and that's the answer I've got, okay. Again, I don't know. If I live close to myself and it's in my Tao to be successful, then I'll, in a CR sense, then I'll be successful, you know. If it's not in my Tao to be CR successful, I think that's a success in just like following myself, okay. And I guess following my own process as I like step into the world and step into myself. That's it.
Wow. Yeah.
Sorry? What do you want? Are there any questions after all that? What questions do you have? Yes. No, thank you.
I just wanted to remind us all in that class we had with Max about success. There was a thing about success, you remember, on the three levels.
Yes.
Had to do with payoff or.
Yes.
Remember that CR success,
yes.
Dreamland, and essence level success,
yes.
So that you can actually completely lose on the CR level and still like feel like you've come away with something because it was so satisfying on the other two levels.
That's great, Barbara.
So it has to. The thing has to. What can I say? Success has to kind of be
integrated.
A question of all three levels, also. And I think that's a helpful piece of information to organizations well, because sometimes it just looks like money. And the whole organization is in agony and pain because nobody talks to each other. They all hate each other. Do you know what I mean? It's unlikely that they'd make a lot of money for long, but
I like that. That's good for
them. Yeah.
That's a great idea for a book. That's a great.
But as you know, the client needs some success to hire you.
Say it again.
You know, client needs some success. So
yes.
So they pay for you as consultant,
yes.
To get the success.
Yes.
So as a marketing point of view, how do you sell yourself as a process work consultant?
I think I'm still learning that, Di. I'm still learning how to do that. And it's like, because process work isn't known by them. All I can do is sell myself. I can't say Errol Prosser because it's meaningless to them. So I've just got to go in there and be myself. I'm new to this field. One thing I will talk about is one of the painful things I have to work on is my own edge to my own low rank. I've gone from a freshman where, like, as a chiropractor, I'm like very successful and well known. I've got a level of mastery in my profession to a profession where I'm like, way bottom of the ladder again. And in my first business name, it was Queensland Facilitation Specialist. So that the specialist was like an overcompensation, you know, to actually, which Katja reminded me of yesterday. You spoke about that, so I had to like reframe, okay, why would someone hire me, not despite the fact that I'm new, because of the reasons that I'm new to this field. So like make friends with my own like low rankness in this new profession. And that's been a big thing. So it's like,
yeah.
To answer your question, it's like all I can do is go in and be myself and be congruently a beginner and use my relationship skills. And if that doesn't work, then what's on my Tao to get that job?
And also I noticed your higher rank is like, you have a higher rank in the chiropractors.
Yeah.
So you can have many chiropractors as a business
consultant.
I've
thought of that, Di, but I actually want to step out of that. So something that seems almost like it's too easy. Well, that sounds crazy, but it's like I want to like earn my stripes as a consultant going out into fresh businesses and learn from the ground up.
Great. Go ahead.
Thank you. Any more questions? Mickey?
I have a little strange question.
Strange.
So you're giving chocolate to us, and I was excited about that for a while. And then I, at one point, like part of me was kind of withdrawing.
Yes.
And I was wondering, okay, chocolate is one, you know, motivation, and what are the other chocolates, like on a different level, maybe? Yeah. Thought about that. I can't think of the example right now. But maybe that's something that you might want to think about.
I'm not sure the question if you asked.
Chocolate, well, the chocolate was a good motivation.
Yes.
And at the same time, there's maybe some other forms of chocolate.
What do you think?
When you work with people, this is one way to do it, and then there's different ways to motivate people. I don't know. I'm a little confused, but...
Yeah.
There's been a lot of work done on the science of motivation, of how to influence, persuade, encourage.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Cialdini is one of the main authors. Yeah, there's a lot of NLP work as well. And then there are identified something like 80 sources of influence and persuasion, yes, that you could draw on depending on the situation. And but it needs to be congruent. You need to feel that you own that somehow in order to be able to use it.
Yes. Yeah. Are you asking me, can I, with a chocolate, why did I do that? Is that what you're asking, or like?
No, it's actually a question for me too. Okay, so maybe I'm not so much for chocolate right now. What kind of form of chocolate do I want? And that's a question to me too. But in terms of this happening right now,
yeah,
I thought that might be your question too.
You mean as a presenter in the moment?
Right, yeah, for example.
I think
right here.
I mean, Anne's the expert in the room, I think, but from what little I've learned about presentation, there are a few things I learned about keeping an audience engaged, okay? One was like incentives, one was speaking personally, one was like asking questions and making it interactive. You know, so I try to, like, as much as possible,
right,
include those all the time, be doing one of those four or five. And the research I do know is very true is people learn when they have fun.
Uh-huh.
The more fun we have, the more we learn.
Yeah.
That's well proven, right? And it's like...
Also when we're uncomfortable is the other
way. Other way.
Yeah. When you're uncomfortable, you learn.
It's when you learn. So I don't want to get uncomfortable. I was being nice to you. I was like having fun.
Yeah.
Which I didn't want to do. You had a whole weekend of being on edge, you know. But my thing was make it fun and light, and therefore keep you engaged and hopefully enhance the learning as well. Sorry.
So I'm very interested in your project.
Yes.
So because
you want to read it.
I would like to apply process work.
Yes.
Not only education for business.
Yes.
So, but also business. So, question is, this is your title, project
yes.
title.
Yes.
So I heard you told about business mainly.
Yes.
So, but business world, probably organization development. So, but why don't you put business in title?
Put business in the title?
Business title. Business world.
In the title? I'm not sure. Stepping into the world here.
World means business.
Well, yes, that's a great question. It's actually.
So I don't know. So no word of business. No word business.
Well, I think great. I think for me, it's like I'm stepping into the world. And my particular world at the moment is in business. But this could be applied to, like, the schools. So then schools will be your world, you know. Or someone could be like, I don't know, NGOs, and that would be like their world, you know. And for me, I also want to talk about our relationship with the world, our being process work, how process work relates to the world. And I guess, like, my secret and shy hope for the project is to inspire people to actually go, wow, what we're actually doing, this process work, is actually out there and it's needed, and with the stuff we have, we can take it to the next level. That we aren't like the knowledge that's out there is amazing and it's huge, but we aren't that far behind the eight ball from a process work point of view. So it's about our and the relationships work, our being process works work, and the other world.
The whole, your answer makes me think, I don't have anything to say or ask a further question, but I think that process work might be on an edge also to think of itself as a business, which, process work is also a business.
I think that's changing. I think it's a PWI, I mean, leading probably knows more than Jennifer and Katja Lenzer and the local. I think with Stephen and Julie at the helm, and they're very business-minded, and the whole changes and the new plan program, I do think we are moving in that direction. So is that a fair comment? No. I think that's definitely Stephen and Julie's kind of vision. It's like, so. Okay. Don't start a group process. Yeah. Okay.
It's just fascinating to me, Errol, that I just loved your presentation.
Thank you.
And I noticed how we're like a world channel here, and how there's lots of issues that obviously a lot of us are really interested in. So, how your presentation and your project is stepping into the world channel, and part of the evidence is the way that we're all getting kind of like, and I've got something about that. It's like it's world channel.
Thank you. That's
so
nice,
people look at the title and you see, he sure stepped into the world channel because it's happening. It's groovy.
Nice, Elena. Thank you. Yes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was ugly.